Hello, it's Monday, June the 28th. I'm Andrew Pearce, and this is the Andrew Pearce Show coming from the Daily Mail Newsroom. Coming up, if you are having a staycation in England, I've just had one. We've got just the answer for how to feed yourself without too much difficulty, particularly if you're in a remote part of the countryside. Almost 100,000 children, most of them primary school, have not gone back to school since COVID, and it's nothing to do with the pandemic. What is going on with their parents? The new Health Secretary, Sajid Javid, is he more or less likely to want to lift those remaining restrictions? But first, the EU, in the form of Angela Merkel from Germany and President Macron of France, are determined to put more restrictions on British holidaymakers going to EU countries. But I think she'll find the Spanish, the Greeks and Portuguese governments will tell them to naff off. So could British tourists be banned from EU countries even if they've had both jabs? Both Germany's Angela Merkel, the Chancellor, and France's President Macron want Britain to be made a country of concern due to the Delta variant, meaning all Britons would need to quarantine for 14 days on arrival in the EU. Many EU countries, including Spain, Greece and Portugal, look set to defy the French and German leaders. I'm joined now by Henry Smith, chairman of the Future Aviation Group and Conservative MP for Crawley. Mr. Smith, as you probably know, I was a Brexiteer. I'm very proud to be a Brexiteer. And it's this sort of nonsense from the German leader and the French trying to tell everybody what to do, which is exactly why I think many people voted to leave.
Well, like you, Andrew, I voted and campaigned for Brexit as well, and I quite agree. Germany likes to try and dominate what Europe is thinking and doing, and I don't think they'll be terribly successful, particularly with the southern European countries, Spain, Portugal, the Greek islands, for example. They very much rely on British tourism in normal times, and I don't think they'll be doing anything to discourage that difficult though travel is at the moment. And absolutely, it's one of the reasons why we voted to be sovereign and make our own decisions. And I think this is far more about politics than it is about science.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, because look, isn't it about Brexit and also the fantastic success of the rollout of the British vaccine and the utter shambles that's been the EU rollout of their own vaccine programme?
Well, the UK COVID-19 vaccination program has indeed been very successful. We're now offering vaccines to all adults. I understand almost two-thirds of UK adults are now doubly jabbed against COVID-19. If you compare that with figures in many parts of the EU, they've only vaccinated about a third of their populations. But I do think there is a point for us here in this country that we need to take advantage of that vaccine dividend and be a little bit more bold in opening up, because the efficacy of the vaccine does seem to be working very well against new variants. So I do think we risk putting ourselves at a competitive disadvantage by not seeking to open up more safe routes for travel.
Mrs. Merkel is coming to Chequers to see the Prime Minister on Friday. We'll almost certainly be her last hurrah, because we know she's standing down later this year. Good riddance, I'd say. What should the Prime Minister say to her?
Well, I think the Prime Minister needs to reiterate two things. First of all, that we are a sovereign, independent country, and that we are globally outward looking, and that needs to be very much our focus. But also, not to look to cooperate in terms of opening up international travel again is actually something that will damage both the German, EU and British economies. And that if we want recovery, if we want to help people save as many jobs as possible and build our economy back, then it's in our mutually beneficial advantage to do that. And politics really costs jobs ultimately.
And you're the MP for Crawley, Gatwick Airport, big part of your locality. How much impact has the effective moratorium on flights in and out of Britain, how bad has that been in terms of jobs for your constituents, Mr. Smith?
Well, 15 months now of aviation really operating, even at the best of times, at about 15% of what normally would be the case has been pretty devastating for employment and the knock-on effects to the economy in aviation communities. But it's an issue of concern for the whole UK-wide economy. We are an island trading nation. We are forging ahead with some fantastic global deals, the Trans-Pacific Agreement, the Australia Agreement, agreements being reached with the United States, and so on. And therefore, really, we do need to be opening up again, not just for local jobs, but for the success of ourselves as a global, internationally connected country.
All right, if I could ask you just finally, you know I'm going to ask you this. Was it the right thing for Matt Hancock to resign at the weekend, Mr. Smith?
Yes, it was. It is untenable for somebody to be espousing rules of social distancing and then to go ahead and break those. People have sacrificed a lot. They've missed many life moments with loved ones over the last 15 months, and people have obeyed the rules, and then to have somebody at the top break those rules is really unacceptable. So he has gone. That's the right thing. And I hope we can now look forward. And Sajid Javid, as the new chancellor, as the new health secretary, being a former chancellor, knows the importance of getting our economy going again.
And
so I hope we will have a positive way forward.
All right. That's Henry Smith, chairman of the Future Aviation Group. And he is, of course, the Conservative MP for Crawley. Thanks for joining us. Visit mailplus.co.uk to listen to The Andrew Pearce Show for free and in full, along with our other podcasts and our video series. And don't forget to tell your Alexa speaker to play Daily Mail News. So the new Health Secretary, Sajid Javid, is updating MPs about the lifting of coronavirus restrictions in Britain. He's talking less than 48 hours after he took over following Matt Hancock's utterly inevitable resignation as Secretary of State for Health. I'm joined now by the Daily Mail's Deputy Politics Editor, John Stevens. John, it's pretty clear to me that Sajid Javid, a former Chancellor of the Exchequer, who knows all about the economic impact these restrictions have had, is itching almost to get the final wave of restrictions lifted.
Yeah, I think we are seeing quite a different tone between him and Matt Hancock. We know that in the Cabinet, the main decisions on lockdown have been decided by what's called the Quad, which is Boris Johnson, Rishi Sunak, the Health Secretary, was Hancock, now is Sajid Javid, and Michael Gove. And we know that they've been slightly split. Michael Gove and Matt Hancock generally have been quite reluctant to lift lockdown unless it's kind of safe to do so. And on the other side of the argument, we've had Rishi Sunak. So it does kind of tip the balance slightly now.
And of course, Sajid Javid is in a very powerful position as the Health Secretary. The Prime Minister can't afford to lose another one. And of course, he walked away from the job as Chancellor of the Exchequer because he objected to Dominic Cummings, formerly of Number 10, imposing political advisers on him. Cummings is one of the first out of the blocks to attack Sajid Javid, but I suspect to Sajid Javid, the abuse that's coming his way from Cummings, he probably almost welcomes it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's probably just ignoring it. I think that he's got so much on his plate coming into that job. You know, we're still in the middle of pandemic, or we're towards the end of it, that I think he's got so much on his plate that I'm not sure he's going to be massively listening to what Dom Cummings has to say. And I think we're also getting to the point with Dom Cummings now where he said so much that he's all starting to lose any kind of impact. And he does just sound like he's quite bitter and kind of just sounds like someone who's out for revenge and kind of niggling away at Boris, niggling away at Carrie. And I think a lot of people, the kind of novelty of hearing what he thinks is beginning to wane.
Most people think as well, don't they, John, that this was a clever appointment. He's a very experienced cabinet minister. He's held a number of cabinet jobs. He's got that very inspiring backstory, the son of an immigrant bus driver.
Yeah, and it also avoided having some messy kind of reshuffle, moving all sorts of people around. And we know at some point Boris Johnson is going to have to hold one of those reshuffles. You've got quite a few ministers in there who could be do with being moved on to different jobs or out of the cabinet. But right where we are now, before we're kind of out of the pandemic, I think he's very keen to keep it quite limited. You've got someone on the back benches. He's got the experience, as you say. Sajid Javid used to be the Chancellor, used to be the Home Secretary. You can pop him into that job without having to move everyone around.
And on the backbenches, John, just finally, how much anger is there still that the Prime Minister decided that the matter was closed after Hancock's apology on Friday, when it seemed pretty clear that he was neither reading the mood of his own party, let alone the mood of the country, by thinking he could keep this idiot minister in the cabinet for a minute longer?
I think most of them are just relieved now he's gone. A lot of them could see on Friday the attitude was, it was going to seem a bit of a repeat of what happened with Dominic Cummings, when MPs said they had massive record post bags with constituents emailing them and saying they weren't happy. I mean, he did take time this time to do it, but at least it's only taken a couple of days. I think most of the damage has probably been limited.
Absolutely. That's very interesting. That's the Daily Mail's Deputy Politics Editor, John Stevens. So visit mailplus.co.uk/subscribe to get access to all our podcasts, videos, opinion pieces and more. If you want to get in touch, tweet us at MailPlus or me at Tory Boy Pierce. Almost 100,000 pupils have not returned to full-time education after lockdown. This has sparked fears they could drop out of education altogether or be drawn into a life of crime. Even among primary school pupils, absenteeism has doubled. This is coming from an analysis of figures from the Centre for Social Justice, which identified 93,514 pupils who were mostly absent between September and December. I'm joined now by Frank Young, who is Political Director for the Centre for Social Justice. Mr. Young, these figures are shocking. How did you get them?
Well, these are official Department for Education figures that were published a couple of weeks ago. And we have gone into the huge data sets where the government, I think, has tried to hide these numbers, and we've taken them out.
Good for you. Are you amazed as I am? I mean, 100,000 children, that's the size of a small town, have effectively dropped out. And how have they been allowed to do so?
Well, I guess I'm worried more than amazed. I think that I'm worried for the future of these young people, particularly the younger ones of primary school age. You know, I think the reality is, over a period of a year and a half with successive lockdowns, very vulnerable young people who were already vulnerable before the pandemic have simply disappeared and are out of sight and out of mind too often.
The figures for primary school children, I mean, are these children just playing, skiving off from school without their parents knowing, or do you suspect their parents do know and are perhaps keeping them out of school because they're worried about COVID?
So I think it's important to say that these numbers exclude COVID-related absence. So
do they? Right.
They do. So this is not, you know, a child who is worried about getting sick or is sick or is shielding with their parents. These are people who are simply not, who are well enough to go to school, but they're simply not going to school. As for what's happening within the families, well, I think if you're missing more than 50% of your lessons in school, there's something very seriously wrong at home. And that's why we probably need, you know, really serious interventions to get children back into school as a place of safety as much as education.
Yeah. I mean, you make the point, and it's very telling, that there's the £3 billion has been announced by the government in post-COVID funding. But as you say, that won't help kids who are no longer in school. Because as you say, kids can't catch up if they don't show up.
Well, that's exactly right. And all of the narrative and policy focus of government to date has been on small-scale tutoring and supporting children with academics and catch up on lost learning. Well, you know, clearly there are a significant number of very vulnerable young people who need much more help than that, and they need some sort of intervention and support to get them back into a classroom.
The worry is we've seen how much knife crime there's been, how many fatal, for instance, in London, we're heading probably for a record number of teenagers being stabbed to death. There must be a worry that some of these kids, these lost souls, are going to get drawn into gangs, which could lead to death, imprisonment, drug addiction, dealing in drugs, a terrible future.
That's right, and this is urgent now for exactly that reason. The Children's Commissioner for England has warned during the period of successive lockdowns that street gangs are using vulnerable children and lockdown as a recruiting period. It's been the best period for recruiting children they've known for a long time, and that's the Children's Commissioner telling us this is what's happening on the ground, and that's being mirrored by charities who are, you know, in local areas talking to these young people and seeing what's happening.
And Mr. Young, tell me, what is the answer? What does the Centre for Social Justice say has to be done to rescue these children? And I guess part of it will be conversations with the parents.
It absolutely has to involve parents and families here. It's not just about the young people themselves. If you're missing more than half of your lessons, something very serious is going wrong in your life and probably at home. And you're going to need very specialist support. The good news is we've seen organisations like School Home Support are able to develop programmes and to help young people who are long-term absent from school get back into the classroom. And what we're simply saying is that where the government is invested in tutors in schools, they now need to invest in professionals who know how to get alongside these families, build up the sort of trust that is needed to encourage these young people back into the classroom.
Very interesting. And well done again for extrapolating those figures out of all that government data. That's Frank Young, who is Political Director for the Centre for Social Justice. Deputy Sports Editor Matt Gatwood's here with the latest sport news. Now, this is a huge week or two in terms of sport, isn't it? Rugby's in disarray because of COVID. Football, of course, of which I've not seen any yet, Matt.
I know.
I'm sorry. Well, I was on holiday last week.
Right, fair enough.
And I did know that Wales lost.
Yes.
Rather badly.
Yes, Wales crashed out of the weekend. Yeah, it was 4-0. A bit of a humping by Denmark, who obviously everyone who's not Welsh was supporting because of what happened
to the player who had the heart problem on the pitch.
Exactly. So they've become everyone's second favourite team.
Yeah. And of course, tomorrow is the big match, England versus Germany, the old enemy.
Yep.
We have to beat them.
Four times they've knocked us out of out of tournament football since 66, when obviously we won the final. So since then they've knocked us out. That's more than any other country. I think we've lost twice to Portugal, twice to Argentina, but four times they've inflicted that damage on us. So and we've never managed to beat them. So we have in group stages, but not in when it's come to a knockout. So yes, we'll obviously want to right a few wrongs tomorrow.
Well, we'll talk a lot more about that tomorrow, Matt. But the wretched German chancellor, of course, Angela Merkel, is coming to Britain this week too to talk about holidays and things.
Right.
Who does she think wants to go on holiday to Germany anyway?
Indeed. Why would we want to go there?
The River Danube. I think there's more interesting rivers than that, don't you?
Certainly are, yeah. Right. Quite right.
Now, Ronaldo's out of the football.
Yeah, so last night, so the last 16 games, as you say, started at the weekend. So we're getting now down to the final ones. And last night, Ronaldo went out, Portugal went out. They were the holders, obviously. Right. They lost 1-0 to Belgium, who...
they're very highly fancied, aren't
they? Highly fancied. I think they're the number one ranked team in the world.
Yeah.
They've got a great array of talent, a lot of whom play in the Premier League. But it was a great game.
Yeah.
Belgium actually weren't brilliant. They were clinging on at the end. Ronaldo was doing his utmost to carry the team through. And get them over the line, but they just came up short. So Ronaldo bows out of the Euros and the holders are gone. So sad for him.
Because he's 36 now, isn't he? Or 35, something. So
I see. Well, he looks like he's 21, though.
When he's 40.
I wouldn't rule him out of playing in 3 years' time in the next Euros.
I quite like whatever he's on.
I wouldn't mind a bit of it.
He's
phenomenal. He played brilliantly last night.
Yeah. So the Lions tour is in disarray.
And yeah, moving on to the rugby. So
going to South Africa.
So this is the Lions, the British Lions, going to South Africa for this tour. They've got two or three warm-up games before they start the tests. Now, they flew yesterday, the Lions, having had their warm-up game at the weekend. Now, the warm-up game went terribly because their captain, Alan Wynne-Jones, dislocated his shoulder just 7 minutes in. So he was their captain, their leader. He's been ruled out of the tour now, so he's not going. So that was a bad start for their first warm-up game. Then they flew yesterday. to South Africa, but South Africa has just announced stricter lockdown measures. They're flying into Joburg, which is where the real sort of COVID is spreading rapidly. So there's now talk of them moving the whole series to Cape Town, playing all the test matches in Cape Town. There were meant to be two in Joburg, one in Cape Town, so they may move it all there. Also, three South Africans tested positive for COVID, so they're having to isolate away from the rest of the squad, so they're not getting the proper practice. There's talk now of the players being confined to their hotel room, so it just feels like this tour is pretty much balanced on a knife edge. Now, the powers that be, in terms of the South Africans and the British and Irish Lions, say, no, we're full steam ahead, it will happen, because there's obviously a lot of money riding on it.
Of course.
Sponsorship deals, commercial deals, TV deals. But it does feel like if this keeps spreading and there's more and more cases of COVID that crop up, the whole thing could come crashing down. So it's in a very delicate position at the moment.
Right. That is the fabulous Deputy Sports Editor, Matt Gatwood. So many of us are expecting a staycation summer in Britain this year. But don't despair, as apparently lots of British food companies are stepping in to make holidays in the UK a little more special. So if you're staying in a country cottage miles from anywhere, holiday hampers can be delivered and they can be a delicious way to enjoy luxury food. And in today's Daily Mail, Sudie Pigott has reviewed some of the best and she joins me now. It's a very clever idea, isn't it, Sudie? Because if you are in a fabulous cottage in a remote part of the countryside, often there's no local shop, no pub for miles around. What are you going to do? Bring all your food with you from home and put it in the fridge and hope it stays for a week? These companies have means you can order the food ahead of schedule.
Yeah, I think they're onto an absolute winner. And these ones are really carefully thought out. I mean, years back, I used to go and stay in a fairly remote cottage in Suffolk with my former husband. And we used to stop and do a big shop en route, and it kind of slightly took the kind of holiday excitement edge off, because that's the last thing you want to do. Or I've been in remote places in Wales and you have to go to some really, really grim Tesco superstore and start arguing with the other people you're with over how much to spend, whereas if you have something like this, it's just fait accompli.
Yeah, so you've done Farmerson and Company Family Staycation Box, £59.50. They're the online butcher of the year, and they specialise in meat from conscientiously farmed heritage breeds. Was it a pretty good hamper, Sudie?
Yes, I've tried their food quite a few times before. I mean, I actually buy it for myself. So yes, I thought it was really excellent. And I like all their principles as well, and that translates into really, really tasty food. I mean, even when I nearly burnt the sausages, they still tasted good.
That's good to hear.
And the pie was amazing. And, if you had a really, really long drive, I can't think of anything more satisfying than having a chicken and leek and bacon pie just to eat up.
Absolutely fabulous, yeah. And these goodies arrive in a special insulated box, everything stays fresh for 72 hours.
Yes. Most of them have really got their act together on the insulated packing. A lot of them use this wool pack stuff. In fact, I was just thinking, my dad's off with my brother and sister-in-law for a few days, probably rainy days, on a barge today, and they could have done with one of these. So
yeah,
I don't know what
they're
planning to do food-wise, but they're not as obsessed with food as me, so maybe they're just going to wing it.
Well, now, you also had a bit of an indulgence here, £400 Impen Maker Ultimate Staycation Experience. So this was Lincolnshire farmer and businesswoman Sarah Louise Fairburn. Now, what goes in this hamper that costs £400?
Well, I mean, everything you could possibly want for a whole weekend, really. Probably the most amazing thing were the tomahawk steaks, which I'd never tried before. I mean, they're absolutely huge, and you cut them like a kind of beef fillet, and they just tasted fantastic, possibly as good as the very best steak restaurants. I mean, they really were superb, and a huge sack of potatoes, and a recipe for making well, a kind of English version of potatoes au pinoir, so using Lincolnshire poached cheese rather than Gruyere, and lots of really lovely organic cream, and loads of puddings, loads of really interesting cheeses, ones I hadn't even tried before, like snacks like truffle and pecorino, nuts, and plenty of booze as well.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, you've got some dry gin and a magnum of Rioja.
Yeah, and all the ingredients for a real slap-up English breakfast as well, and lots of condiments. I mean, it was really, really well thought out.
And I see they thought of everything, these companies, Sudhi, because there's also one which is all about fish.
Yes, that's Foreman and Field, who are one of the oldest London-based smoked salmon company, and like everyone else, they decided they needed to pivot a bit, although they've long been offering lots of pre-prepared food and have an in-house chef who's really good. But I like their selection. It's good for people, you know, who are very, very into their food, and they also included English wines, which was great.
Very nice. And just finally, Sudhi, there was even a breakfast hamper too, which is quite a nice idea.
Yeah. I mean, if you're arriving really late at night and have maybe stopped on the way, you know, for your supper at the pub, and this was like a really luxurious Daylesford pack with most beautiful smoked salmon. And it was all beautiful and, you know, really, really yellow yolked eggs and some excellent Prosecco, which I'm normally a bit sniffy about.
Well, it sounds it went well. And you gave most of them good marks, but it seems that the one that you got the highest mark, Sudhi, was the really expensive one, the £400 one. But I suppose it should have got 5 out of 5 at that price.
I think so. And the woman behind it has literally just set up the company, just in the process of going through a horrible divorce, which was very unexpected, and she's just turned things around and started her own business and was so enthusiastic about everything that I think that probably influenced me a little bit. But I just loved her selection of foods and the fact there were lots of things I'd never come across before. And I think, you know, when you're on holiday, you want a little bit of a voyage of sort of foodie discovery, even if you're not leaving the country.
I think you do. It sounds a literally mouth-watering selection, and it all looks rather good. Sudhi, thanks for joining us. That's Sudhi Pigott, who's written a fabulous review in today's Daily Mail of all these very, very interesting and tasty holiday hampers. Thanks for joining us. That's all we've got time for today. For the latest from the Daily Mail, download the Mail Plus app. Every weekday at 5 p.m, you can listen to me all over again. I'm Andrew Pearce. This is The Andrew Pearce Show. I'll be back tomorrow. Have yourselves a great evening and good night.